What's up, guys? Welcome to episode number 12. Today, I sit down with Tony Sukar, who is a Peruvian-American percussionist. He is also a composer, arranger, bandleader, and producer. A little bit about Tony. He was born in Lima, Peru. When he was 2 years old, his family immigrated to the U.S. and settled in Miami, Florida. Among his relatives were a number of musicians who encouraged Sukar to develop his own musical interests. The family's musical tradition began with his paternal great-grandparents, Mexican composer Lauro Uranga and Spanish flamenco dancer Adelina Esteve Gregory. Sukar's father, Antonio Sukar, is a pianist, and his mother, Mimi Sukar, is a singer. Since he was 3 years old, Tony started playing the Peruvian cajon, and when Sukar was 13, he began playing drums with his parents' band when they performed at weddings and other private and corporate functions, mainly in Miami, Florida. Tony already had an active musical career while still an undergraduate student. As a college junior, he took over as musical director of the family band, which he rebranded as Mixtura. After graduating from FIU, Tony became an artist in residence there in 2012, continuing to work with the school's music students on a number of projects. He is the youngest artist ever to hold his appointment at FIU. A little bit about the Unity Project. It's a collaborative project to produce a musical tribute to Michael Jackson. As well as live performances, the project released an album consisting of 14 Jackson songs rewritten to include Latin influences, primarily salsa. Unity was launched in 2015 with a concert at Olympia Theater in Miami, and it was sponsored and transmitted by PBS TV, 360 stations, primetime, Friday night, 9 p.m., and also sponsored by Universal Music Classic. Unity features more than 100 musicians, such as Latin superstars Tito Nieves, John Secada, La India, Obi Bermudez, Jennifer Pena, Michael Stewart, Angel Lopez, Sheila E., Judith Hill, John Rodriguez, Fernando Vargas, Maribel Diaz, Kevin Ceballo, and it was presented in PBS TV by Gloria Estefan and the mixing magic of Jackson's legendary engineer, Bruce Sweden. I got to meet Tony at the NAMM show a couple years ago through my sister, Kritzia. She introduced me to him, told me about his work and his career, and I checked out the album. Amazing stuff. I had never heard a Michael Jackson tribute in that way. So pretty awesome that coming from a fellow Peruvian that he came up with this grandiose idea. Much of what you'll hear today is about what it's like to undertake such a big project like the one he did, which he said took him about 5 years. You'll hear about his career, what he's accomplished, what he's continuing to do today, as well as his upcoming work this year in 2019.
If you're listening via Spotify, I invite you to follow Sir Kevin Says. If you're on Apple Podcasts, you can show your support by subscribing and rating the show 5 stars. Alternatively, you can watch the video version of this and every other episode on my YouTube channel, Kevin Michael Chong, or visit my website, www.sirkevinchong.com, and view or listen to them that way.
Without further ado, episode number 12. Welcome to episode number 12 of Sir Kevin Says. Today I'm with none other than Tony Sukar.
What's up, Sir Kevin?
How you doing, Tony?
Doing great, man.
Yeah?
You know, it's a pleasure to be on your show, man.
Man, thank you for being on the show, dude.
No, it's an honor, man. You kidding me? We got triple threat cameras right here going on.
Yeah. How's the NAMM show treating you, man?
It's great, man. You know, just here for one day. It was a busy day,
yeah.
And you know, tomorrow I got a recording session and I headed back to Miami, so yeah. Unfortunately can't be here for the full time. I usually come here for 4 days, you know, so just crammed everything into one day. Is this a Spanish interview?
No, it's English.
English.
Yeah. But you can, I mean, I'm sure we got some Spanish speaking folks.
For sure.
You know, chimpum.
Callao forever. Peru.
So Tony, what are you up to these days, man? What are you working on?
I'm launching 2 albums this year. So I am working on one project, which is a Latin jazz, big band, world music type of thing. It's called Raices Jazz Orchestra.
Okay.
It's a nice project with a guy named Pablo Hill, which is an incredible saxophone player, composer, arranger, extraordinaire from Venezuela. So, you know, we've been working on this project. We released a couple of videos. It was very successful. So we decided to do an album. And, you know, we're recording a bunch of our compositions and stuff. So I'm very caught up in that. And then I'm also caught up in my follow-up album to the Unity project that I released, which is a Michael Jackson tribute. Yeah. So it's my next follow-up, like, salsa tropical record. And it's coming out really awesome, man, because it's, you know, it's a lot of original compositions, nice songs I recorded in Cuba last week. And I'm doing a lot of stuff here.
Yeah.
Too, in the States, obviously, in Puerto Rico as well.
Yeah.
So finishing that album up, and I want to launch that by May. Everything goes well, April, May. And then also, you know, working with other artists that are, you know, hitting me up to do productions. I have my new studio.
Yep.
So
congratulations, by the way.
Thanks, man. It's Unity One Studio in Miami. It's a beautiful studio, man. It's like, you know, we're going to have Richard Bona come out next week to record some stuff for my project, and doing some stuff with Gianmarco, which is an incredible Peruvian artist. And I've had, you know, like Gilberto Santa Rosa record there.
Yep.
Rey Ruiz, Luis Enrique. You know, a bunch of different people have come out and, you know, really like the sound. So it's going very well. I'm extremely grateful for all these opportunities.
Awesome, man. So you're originally from Lima? Were you born in Peru?
I was born in Peru, but I was raised in Miami.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you spent how many years in Peru before you moved to Miami?
I was just 2 years.
2 years.
So okay. I grew up in Miami ever since I was a little kid. So, you know, although, like, you know, I feel very Peruvian because my family is very Peruano to the max. So my mom doesn't speak English to this day. So that's how I like it. You know, it stayed within the culture, and that's why I perform a lot of Peruvian music and I create a lot of Peruvian stuff. I'm so close to the culture because of that reason.
Yeah. Yeah. What was your first instrument?
The cajon.
Cajon.
Which is a Peruvian instrument.
Yep.
Yeah.
Most people think it's a
Spanish.
Yeah.
But no, it's Peruvian, you know. And that instrument's, you know, it's got a lot of popularity right now.
Yeah.
It's like really like the acoustic, you know, version of a drum set now.
Right.
And it's awesome to see that because, you know, and whoever would have thought this folkloric Peruvian instrument would reach so many people. So now it's like all over the place and it makes me happy. Yeah.
And even with the implementation of like the snares inside the cajon now, you know, it creates this modern sound, you know, versus what it was before, where it's just, you know, just the cajon itself without anything inside to make it sound different, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Know? No, that's the cool part, you know, that it's a hybrid now. You know, there's like so many different versions. You have flamenco ones, you have stuff for pop, you have like, you know, ones that you can turn off or on the snares.
Right. Yeah. LP does a good job of making those. And
yeah, LPs, you know, they're always like trying to, you know, push the envelope and create the best percussion out there. You know, they're leaders, I would say.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to be a part of their family, you know. And they also released my version of my cajon, you know, my signature series cajon, which unfortunately has been sold out, back ordered for a while because they were making it in Peru, but, you know, they made, I think it was like, I don't know, 200 units. Then they sold out and then they went to go make them again. But the guy that was making them like said he couldn't make them anymore because it was too complicated for the budget, right? And we didn't want to like skyrocket the price for the people, you know? So it's complicated to do stuff in Peru right now because the shipping, they don't make it easy, you know? I mean, to ship something from Taiwan to the United States is like $5-$10 in a big order. In Peru, it's just a lot closer. You would think it's cheaper, but it's like $40, you know?
Oh my gosh.
So it's crazy. I don't know what's going on, man. Peruvian people are getting crazy, you know? Yeah.
So you started with cajon. How did you make your way to timbal?
Well, I started with the drum set, actually, and piano was my next instrument because my dad's a pianist. So I started getting a passion for the piano because there was a piano at the house. And then I auditioned for magnet school, middle school, playing classical piano. But then there was always a drum set in the house too. So I would just, you know, jump on that. And I had a really bad middle school teacher on piano. So I kind of like got discouraged with the piano. And then I started playing soccer, really. And it was just like, I love soccer, man. For me, it was the best thing. But then, like, you know, you since you have instruments in the house, you kind of like, you know, pick up on it. And then my dad bought this timbal. And then you know, his band, he had a band with my mom, and they would always play a lot of tropical music. So then they put me on drums because they didn't want to pay a drummer. So I had to do that as like my chore, right? That was like my job at 13 years old. And then playing salsa, you know, you had to play timbales. So that was like the instrument I had a connection with it, man. And it was just something about it that I really loved more than anything else.
Yeah.
So then, you know, besides the cajon, timbal was the instrument that I really truly loved the most. Right. But I didn't know I was going to be a professional, you know, musician or anything. It was, for me, it was just a hobby and, you know, like a chore, like for literally, like just, you got to play an instrument if you're part of this family type of thing.
Were you working like an ordinary job while you were doing the music stuff, like the timbal and cajon?
No,
or?
You know, thank God I that was my job because of my parents' band. Mm. And I never really had to get another like day job, you know, because I always go into school. So
yeah,
after high school, I went to college. And then I started, you know, I studied music. And then when I, you know, started studying music, that's when I said to myself, I was like, you know what, I gotta really like bring it up a notch with my parents' band. So that's what I did. I took over my parents' band, Mixtura band. And then I said, you know what, I'm gonna start writing arrangements. I'm gonna like, let's record something, let's do original stuff. And then this cover corporate band started transforming into something else. Then we started getting a lot of gigs. And then that was sort of my job. It was like, okay, you know what? Like, I'm not only a musician, but now I'm a director, I'm a band leader, an entrepreneur, you know? Yeah. I need to, you know, create a marketing plan, make a website, you know, branding, right, create a logo, and just hustle for shows. So that's what I literally dedicated my life to during college.
Awesome.
And that was good because it prepared me for the real world, you know, once I got out.
Yeah. Most people, anytime I talk to anybody, you know, Tony, like, yeah, he's a guy that did the Michael Jackson album in salsa, you know, whatever. Do you feel like that's the one thing that kind of catapulted your career, or were there other things behind the scenes that people don't know that were kind of pushing you, you know, forward?
I mean, I think everything is, you know, is a stepping stone, you know, but that was a huge one. It was like, you know, big
step. And never done before, right? I don't think so.
Nobody had, you know, there was some, you know, just like everything else, you know, you go to Bruno Mars salsa cover on YouTube and you'll find stuff, you know, but it's like little maquinita and it's just like sounds whack. So nobody had really done anything serious.
Yeah.
And it was just a great idea and executed well. It wasn't an easy project. It was like a 5-year project. But if you notice, like if you look at it, you know, if you look at the ordinary musician, right, at my level, because I don't consider myself like a, you know, incredible percussionist. I'm an okay percussionist, you know, like many other out there, you know, that we can do the job. We can play, we can read, we can record, but I'm not Mark Quiñones, I'm not Bobby Allende, you know, I'm not Giovanni Hidalgo, this beast, you know? So if you analyze, like, you know, if I would have just stuck to my instrument, you know, 5 years, I would have still been just the okay guy. But I just literally decided, you know what, these 5 years, I'm not going to do anything else but just really concentrate on just creating a beast project, you know? And so while somebody maybe would have taken 25 years to develop an entire career to get that recognition, you know, I've been able to get this recognition in just these 5 years because of this one project.
Yeah.
That I feel like I still don't even deserve, you know? I feel like, you know, people stop me and people are like, man, I love your music and I'm your fan. But I feel like, thanks, you know, but there's so many other great people out there, you know? But there is something that I do that not a lot of other people do, is just like think outside the box.
Yeah.
And try different things. And I'm not afraid to risk.
Yeah.
And I think that's the key really to success. That I learn as a common denominator from all the great people that I've worked with. They're not afraid to make a risk. They're not afraid to like fail.
Right.
And when you do that and you know, you hit a friggin' home run, man, that's like, you know, bases are loaded and you hit the grand slam. So that's what kind of that project did. And then after that, it's just been like incredible because I've been doing shows all over the world.
Yeah.
We just got back from Havana doing like the jazz festival there 2 nights.
Nice.
You know, to get invited by, you know, the Havana Jazz Festival in Cuba performing Cuban, Afro-Cuban, salsa,
sure.
And getting that stamp of approval from them and having so many fans. I have so many fans over there. I had like no idea.
Wow.
And the cool thing is that like a lot of, I would say, a good 80% of my fan base are musicians or real hardcore music enthusiasts. And so in the world like where, if I get stopped, out in the supermarket or something for a picture, I would say 7 times out of 10, it'll be a musician or something. Well, in the United States or anywhere in the world, musicians are a minority. There's not that many musicians, but it feels like in Cuba, it's quite the opposite. Like,
out of everybody.
Everybody there is a musician or a hardcore music enthusiast. Yeah. Like they love music. They're dancers or they're artistic or literally like they can play an instrument, I guess it's their escape or something, the music. Yeah. So I felt like Michael Jackson over there. I was just like, what's going on, man? I'm getting stopped everywhere. It's like, what is it? I got, actually, the day of my first show, I almost got nauseous of how how intense, I was anxious of how intense the saludos, the greeting was from the people. I was like, man, I'm overwhelmed. What's going on here? I'm here to just perform. Why is this happening? And I just picture after picture after picture. And I was like, wow.
Oh, man.
So it was and I had I'm never used to having anybody like a road manager with me or, security guard, nothing. It's just I'm just walking. But right. I think I needed one that day just to just push
get through.
Get through and just get some water at one point. And I don't know how to say no either. And I don't want to say no. So, by the time I got on stage, I was like, my mouth was like a freaking towel, dude. I was like, I had no saliva left from talking so much. I was like, my God. But it was fun, man.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. Was that your first time to Cuba?
It was actually my second time. My first time was a month ago, actually. And I went to do a recording.
Okay.
And then due to that recording that I did, they were like, we would love to invite you to the festival. And what do we have to do to make it happen? And, we just made it work. We made all the logistics work. I called, the musicians. And then I also went with Mark Quiñones and Bobby Allende with their band from New York.
Wow.
Actually, Mark was the one that suggested to them to bring us over there. And it was just a phenomenal experience. We took Angel Lopez, John Rodriguez, my singers.
Man.
They killed it. Angel, he's celebrating 20 years of one of his biggest hits called Apuro Dolor, which is his national anthem over there, bro. Like salsa, And he sang it and he got super emotional. People were singing it, almost cried or whatever. It's just impressive, what music can do. And especially in countries like this that they live salsa to the max.
Right, of course. Who are some of your current mentors?
Current mentors, for sure, Mark Quiñones. I would say he's the top right now. Just because of all the stuff that he's shown me, percussion wise, not only that, but I would say production wise as well. A lot of people don't know him as a producer, but he's an incredible producer. So his ideas and everything, he's definitely one of them. Another one is Bruce Wedeen, which is Michael Jackson's co-producer and mixing engineer that when I worked with him on the Michael project, all the advice he gave me was incredible. Carlos Alvarez is another mentor. Mm-hmm. He's another engineer, has won multiple Grammys.
Wow.
He's mixed all the recent Mark Anthony albums. He's a really, really good engineer. So there's just, there's several out there, that really have helped me make the right decisions when it comes to the business aspect and the musical aspect and to stay along the same lines of what my passion is about, which is creating music.
Were you the first to reach out to them and say, can you help me with this project? Or did they offer their services to you? Or how did that relationship come about with, Michael Jackson's co-producer, Mark Quiñones? How did you get in touch with these people?
What was the music, man? In the beginning when you don't have any to show, who's going to believe your talent, right? So that's why I tell everybody, man, the music will speak for itself. Your project whatever you do will speak for itself and it will attract the people to you. And that's what's happening, you know? Like recording with Richard Boner right now, like I wouldn't, you know, that's crazy, man.
Yeah.
You know, I was just like, Richard is one of these guys that, you, like, bro, he's a genius, dude. Like, he's crazy. And then it's like, I met him at NAMM. And then he's like, man, I know about your project, bro. I saw those Michael Jackson videos, fire. And he loves Latin music, you know? Yeah. And I was like,
he did a whole album on that, right?
Yeah. Dude, I jam to it all the time. He's got some killer songs.
Bilongo, of course.
That's a warrior. Choco, choco, kicking. Sabor, bro. So, you know, I meet him here, and then it's like the opportunity comes where after a year passes by, I have this song that I think he would like kill on bass and sing, and then I just text him and I'm like, dude, and I catch him at the right time, and then he's down to work, you know. Same thing with Bruce. I would have never thought I would have been able to sit down with him, but yeah. Like I got a connection to him through a friend. And but the music is what really attracts the people, because if you're like, yeah, you don't know, this guy's the best person in the world or whatever, the best musician, but he'll send you a track and the track is like kind of garbage. There's nothing that's going to save you at that point. You know? It's like, no. You know what I mean? Especially if you don't have money. I mean, maybe if you pay him thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, then maybe they'll be like, yeah, okay. But if you're trying to do something where you need that support, that true support, you know, your music has got to be hot, man.
Yeah.
Music.
Yeah.
It's gotta say something. It's gotta feel. It's gotta move people.
Right. Right.
You know? Yeah. And that's something that I've been able to do, thank God, you know.
Right.
It's just like that feeling when you're arranging and then like you're just like, whoa, this harmony sounds good, and then you just start creating a hook and boom, you got it.
Yeah.
That's from God, you know, and you're just like, there's real no theory that will, or formula that you can apply. You know what I mean? It's just, there's something within you that just, boom, gets it there.
The popularity, was it gradual or was it overnight? You know, you have these things that become viral in a day now, especially with social media, YouTube. Something can be a hit and within a day you have 1 million hits, 500,000 hits. How was that like at the beginning? Was it something that just, you know, you saw people were sharing it and then it like became this overnight success? Or has it been still a gradual thing that you, you know, are attributing a lot of your success to?
No, it was a gradual thing, you know? It was never a viral project. Although there's like a video that has like 5 million views, like I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of shares on Facebook.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's considered a pretty viral video.
Right, right.
So a lot of people got to see it from there. But it's been a gradual thing because it, market's so big, you know, and it was a work in progress. You know, you launched the album first and you launched the first single and then you got to like test the waters and then you release a music video here and there and you see how people react to it. So to this day, we're still working and gaining exposure. It's never just an overnight thing unless you're like super lucky, you know, like Gangnam Style.
And even that is like, why?
Why no, and it's like, it's not even why. It's kind of like, what happens after that? You know? Now he's gone. He's a ghost. You know, it's ghost town. Because this, I mean, not necessarily, but ghost town in comparison to what he was before.
Exactly.
Because he might have his markets. I'm sure he has his markets. And I'm sure he's set, you know. And wherever he goes and sings that song, it's like, oh. An explosion.
Exactly. And people go to Korea just for that street, you know?
Right.
So
right.
Yeah.
But like I said, if, you know, what are the odds for that to happen to you? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like the snarky puppy thing. But, you know, their content's so good that it's like it was bound to happen eventually.
Yeah.
You know? So that's what I think, at least in the genre of music that I see your podcast guests. You know, we're in a performing arts world, you know. We're in a world that the quality counts. It's the most important thing. So that's my focus, man. Creating quality content, letting the people decide what they like, what they don't like.
Right.
Don't force them. And then just going with the flow.
Yeah. Now, as a band leader, you have a lot of responsibility. You deal with managers at different venues. You deal with your own people, their own personalities, you know, scheduling, hotels, all these things. How do you go about balancing all these things? Do you have somebody that helps you, or do you do it all on your own? Do you like to do it all on your own?
Well, in the beginning, it was all on my own, for sure. I mean, if you look at the PBS special that I did, right? This was like a $500,000 project, you know? Talking about 12 cameras, 2,000 people, 37 musicians on stage, 8 different artists flying in from everywhere, 4 days of production, catering, you know, logistics, hotel, transportation, rehearsals, you know, following the guidelines of the TV structure, all of this stuff,
man.
Editing, like, and mixing, multi-track, redundant recording. So in case if like one blows up or something, the other one picks it up, you know, insanity or lighting, you know, backdrop, wardrobe, gum for the, you know, the people, like artists, you know, writers. Bro, I did that. I was the production manager of my own show that I was performing in, you know. People are like, are you crazy? I hired a production manager. I paid him one of the best. But, you know, sometimes things don't go the way you want them to go. And like my production manager last minute got another gig with Mana, you know, the same week. And he was like, bro, I can't let this go. It's too much money. But I know you can do this, Tony. Like, you're super agile with everything. And you're basically doing my job anyways because you're so anal with everything. And I was like, you know what? Whatever, man. I've been doing it for so long at a small scale. So, like, with my regular small band. So I did it for that. And I just applied the same formula just on a bigger scale. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Google, Excel sheets, and just, like, everything. Accounting was just perfect. And I got it done. You know, it was an incredible show, PBS special, and launched nationwide. Over 300 stations. It was a big success. Gloria Estefan, you know, was the host of the show. It was a huge thing. And, you know, my message out there for the younger people that are like wanting to be band leaders, entrepreneurs, start their own project. It's like, you're going to need to do stuff that you don't want to do. It's just the name of the game. Mm-hmm. Now, I've been able to delegate to a production manager. You know, my dad helps me out with the bookings. But still, in the way, the brains of the operation is you, you know?
Yeah.
So till this day, I have to do hands-on work, you know. Just got a gig right now for New York and, you know, I'm coordinating with my production manager. It's like, okay, who's flying from where? And then I ask him the prices. But he, you know, he does at least the legwork of Google flights and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it's just the name of the game, you know. Until you're like Bruno Mars, you know. You're going to have to do it. I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's good at the end of the day because, I mean, you know, your mindset changes and you're able to look out for yourself in a way that you could protect your career in a big way, because a lot of times these managers will come out and, you know, you just not know about anything. And they most likely will be robbing you a big percentage of your profits and your money, well-deserved money, because you're the one who's, you know, writing the music. Mm-hmm. You're the one who's sweat, blood, and tears in the studio, dying.
Right.
You know? Like, no sleep. And then these managers come out of nowhere, you know, tie in a suit, and they're just like, yeah, you know, and boom. And then all of a sudden, they're just taking all your money and manipulating everything so they can make more profits, but not really looking at the longevity of your career. You know, your career is not a span of a year and 2 years. You know, we're talking about a career of 45 years,
exactly. 50
years. So in that case, it's like, all right. I mean, that's why you got to know how to do it so that nobody else can sort of trick you into what they're doing. So That's my motto, man. At
least. Yeah.
I mean, that's, I truly enjoy learning, you know. I have a passion for doing things with perfection. Whether it's an Excel sheet or it's a musical score. I mean, for me, it's the same. Math is math, you know. Yeah. So, yeah.
What continues to inspire you today?
There's a lot of things that continue to inspire me, you know. A lot of different artists that create great music. Places that I visit, like Cuba, super inspiring, man. Wow. See all those bands live. And
yeah.
See the people enjoy the music like they did. Was like extremely inspiring. Family inspires me, you know. There's just so much, man, that everyday life sort of gives me. And you know, you never know, but these experiences or even conversations can inspire songs, can inspire, you know, ideas for certain projects. So you just got to be open to that. You got to be on that frequency, you know what I mean? Where you're always just receptive to things in a different way. You know, a lot of people live life like very materialistic, focusing on what they, their convenience, you know, or how am I making money right now, or I'm not making money. But if you're on a totally different mindset of just like, you know, emotionally connected to your surroundings, then that's when the cool things like come by, because, you know, great songs, great projects, great movement can come from anything.
I ask this question to mostly every guest that I've had on the show, and every answer has been different. What does value mean to you?
Well, I mean, it's a circle of life, you know? It's kind of like, there's always going to be the underdogs, you know, the newcomers that they, you know, se tienen que comer un cable. They have to do it, like, in order to start getting known, you know? Seasoned guys are not, you know, they're going to value themselves because they already went through that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So you can't judge those kids or whatever for doing it, because a lot of people tend to say, oh, they're ruining the industry because they start charging less. Means that, okay, now people are getting used to paying less. And then they're not going to pay me. And then, so I have to do stuff for less because of this. But it's not that way, you know? It's like, you know, if you know that you're good at what you do, I mean, you put the value on yourself, period. And then there's stuff that I do all the time that's for free. I deserve value. I deserve, you know, compensation at a certain level because of all the hard work that I've put into it. Mm-hmm. But sometimes, you know, you're not going to get paid because... But the opportunity is great.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So an investment.
It's an investment. And it's not even an investment. It's more like, it's an incredible experience. You know, we're living life. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The value is not monetary. Like for me, at least.
That's good. Yeah.
It's about the experience. It's not the experience of what I'm gaining from it, but it's just, you're living this moment, you know? Like, you know, that's like nutrition for your soul. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then a lot of times that's more, you know, valuable than anything. Like if you ask me, hey, Tony, how much did Tito Nieves or John Secada charge you to record on the Unity album? You know, I'll tell you nothing. They charged me nothing. They literally did $0. You know, do you think their value is worth $0? No, it's not that. It's just that, you know, the situation just, it was just what it was, you know, that I didn't have any money. But they saw an incredible experience. They saw an incredible project to be a part of. And we all united for that, you know. So there's moments for that. But like I said, the value does not come in. The price tag is not what the value is, you know. The value is the emotional value, which is based on many different aspects, you know, the message, the social impact, what it makes people feel, the quality, you know? So that's what it means to me, at least.
Yeah, that's good. You've worked with a bunch of different artists up to date, you know, Sheila E., Tito Nieves.
Yeah, of course.
All these incredible human beings. Have you ever encountered an artist where you thought they were going to be one way, like they were going to be super chill, you know, fun to work with, and they ended up being something completely different? And if you have, how did you handle the situation? Or how do you handle those situations where you're working with A-list artists, you know, but they have a certain ego or attitude towards the situation?
Yeah. I mean, luckily, I've never had a situation where it's been like a negative experience. I mean, a knock on wood, you know, I mean, it might happen to me tomorrow, but
let's hope not.
Man, I've always thought like people are going to be difficult and they end up being super nice, you know, or super like chill. Like India, for example, like some people had told me, oh, she's a little difficult to work with or whatever. The moment I worked with her, we just hit it off. So fun.
Yeah.
Connected to the energy of the, you know, of the environment. And it was just like crazy awesome, man. What an experience. You know, we spent like 6 hours in the studio just vibing out on a song and recording it and hanging out. There's also like Sheila E. That happens to be a super party woman, man. Wow. What energy that, yeah. You know, she has like, it's a different league, man. I remember we did the Sheila E. cruise and there was a jam session till like 4 or 5 in the morning. It was crazy, right? It's a crazy jam, bro. So then she had in her schedule like 9 in the morning the next day on a Sunday. It was going to be like, you know, service, worship, and, you know, the whole thing. And we're just like, yeah, nobody's going to wake up for this. Like, Sheila's going to be dead asleep. Like, we're all going to be gone. You know? Comes to know, like, she's the first person there ready to rock and roll. Wow. You know? And you're just like, what? And plus, she had been, like, you know, performing the entire week, like, logistics and getting, it's her cruise, you know? Like, so she has a million musicians on stage and, like, you know, man, coordinating everything. So she hadn't slept for like 3 weeks prior to the cruise. And there she is, you know, hardcore. And you're like, what, man? You know? So you would think like Sheila E has like,
yeah,
management team and she's diva, you know, and, you know, she's doing nothing. You know, she'll go and perform and she'll be like away from the people in her cabin. Quite opposite, man. She was everywhere with everyone all the time. And that's stuff that I just was like, wow. So thank God, you know, God has put these amazing artists in mi camino. And I think that's one of the reasons why I stay so humble, because they're so humble and I admire them. So I'm like, you know what? The key to success here is just being professional and being humble.
The idea of reading music, how important is that? For what you're doing, you have to record these songs, I'm assuming fairly quickly sometimes. You know, it's one or two takes and on to the next one. How important is that to the musician today?
Well, if you're going to be a session musician, that's like hands down one of the most important parts. Because like I said, you know, no producer likes to waste time. Nobody likes to waste time and money, because studios cost money. Mm-hmm. So if you can't read, I mean, you're stuck, you know. You need, like, because in the studio, a lot of times things are being born in the moment. So you don't have like a demo to show or something. I mean, most of the time now, people program and everything. But a lot of times they won't send it to you ahead of time because of, you know, confidentiality reasons or whatever. Mm-hmm. So you got to go come in the studio and look at stuff in the first sight, you know, and just start vibing out and play record bass or piano. So it's extremely important. Also, if you want to play gigs with local bands, and, you know, it's not like in Cuba where you just play with one band and that's it. Over here, you got to play with like every band in order to make a living. What does that mean? You got to read, because you're not going to spend like, you know, 3 hours every single day for an entire week for, you know, to prepare for a gig. Yeah. You know, no, it's just going to, you're going to go to one rehearsal, you're going to read it down, get it on your fingers, and then you're going to go perform.
Yeah.
So it's by hand one of the most important things.
Was it a goal of yours to become famous?
I mean, I never really searched for fame, you know? I mean, not that I have fame now. I mean, I still feel like I'm no one, you know? But the little fame that I do have, I'm thankful for. And I know that it's a responsibility because people look up to you, you know? Yeah. And you're an influencer in a certain way. So you gotta, like, you gotta take that responsibility and know that no la puedes cagar, you know what I mean? Like, for real. Because then you start cagando la gente, you know what I mean? Like, nah, chill. If you're gonna mess yourself up when nobody knows you. But if no people know you, people follow you, you're screwed. Yeah. You know, that's it. You gotta, like, walk straight, man, you know? I mean, nobody's perfect.
Yeah.
Be real, right? But, you know, I never searched for it. And, you know, I just wanted to do good music.
Yeah.
But I did want to leave a mark. And I do want to leave a mark. Like Tito Puente did. Yeah. You know what I mean? Tito Puente was, like, you know, king of freaking mambo. King of the freaking sabor. The timbal. An artist, entrepreneur. You know, incredible arranger, composer, multi-instrumentalist. You name it. You know, he was on freaking The Simpsons, bro. You know? How do you get on The Simpsons being a timbalero? You know what I mean? Like, serious right now? Bro, so that was what I wanted to do. I was like, you know what? I want to become a legend like Tito Puente was. In a day and age where instrumentalists are not even, that's not even a word for people in the dictionary. You know, kids, instruments, what is that? You know what I mean? Like, they don't even understand. So it's difficult. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't say it's harder. Because let's face it, back in the day, there was no social media. It's either you got lucky and landed a deal, or you were just a no-no forever. This day and age, you don't have to have a deal, but it can be, you know, you could be pretty successful with social media, you know, stuff like this, content. People enjoy it. People follow it. People subscribe, and that's it.
Right.
So, you know, it has its pros and cons. Both eras have pros and cons. You know, but for me, this is my era. So I'm just playing the game how it is. I'm just trying to be as successful as I can, man, and trying to make a difference.
Do you have any other passions besides music that people don't know about? Or you doing your own time? And it's like, man, I love this just as much as I love music.
Yeah, for sure. Soccer is, you know, for me, my biggest passion. Playing soccer, you know, for me, that's like hands down the best. Like, it's the moment where I could just forget about everything, man, and just want to make the freaking goal, you know. It's like the best feeling. Plus, I played it all my life, you know.
Yeah.
So it's the bomb, man. I like to watch a lot of movies, but I never get to watch movies. I actually watched a movie on the way over here.
On your flight?
I'm on the flight because they couldn't sleep towards the end. It was a thriller, bro. I love thrillers, bro. Like, you know, you don't figure out the movie until the end type of thing. It was called Searching. It was really dope. It was about an abduction of a little girl. It's pretty crazy. But anyways, yeah, there's, you know, I love to do a lot of things, man, you know. It's just I never get time to do it.
Yeah.
So right now my life is pure music, bro. Hands down, like, I haven't played soccer in like 2 months, you know.
Wow.
Or more than that, maybe 3 or 4 months. I barely have time to work out or even sleep, you know. But that's the name of the game. So if you guys are, you know, anybody out there that's listening that, you know, you want to become a band leader, you know, and you think it's going to be an easy ride, think twice, bro. Nothing is easy about this. Nothing. Literally zero.
Always striving, always working hard, always having to give 100%, right?
Of course, man. If you don't give it 100, bro, guaranteed you're going to be frustrated. And you're going to be on a plateau there, like,
yeah,
just hanging out by yourself, taking a 10. It's impossible.
Yeah,
it's impossible to compete, man. There's a small window of opportunity that millions of people are trying to get into, and maybe only 10 are able to get through.
Yeah.
Imagine how much you got to fight through, you know? So if you're an easy quitter, you know, this won't be for you. But if you do have a dream and you're passionate about it, then follow it, because there's nothing that will stop you. You know, there's going to be a bunch of people in the way that are going to try to, like, you know, maybe quote unquote end your career because you're like a little bit of a threat. But the music will, if your music is real, man,
don't worry about it.
Yeah, and there's nothing that can stop you.
Yeah.
Especially today's day and age, there's nothing.
Yeah. You essentially answering my last question, but it was going to be, you know, what advice you had for up and coming musicians, you know, those that are trying to do music at the highest level. You know, you basically already answered that, but I don't know if you had any last thoughts or any last words that you'd like to say concerning that.
Well, you know, prepare yourself. That's the best thing, you know. Prepare yourself to get to that moment and never, like, focus on the last. Like, never focus on the last objective or mission only, you know. Like, know where you want to go, but just look to the next step ahead, man. You know, if it's just, okay, I gotta wake up an hour earlier or 2 hours earlier to do, you know, some exercises or practice, whatever. Whatever it is that you need to do in order to make that next step, do it, because that is what counts, you know? So a lot of people are like, man, but how am I gonna get to that level or whatever, like, you just got to do it, man.
Yeah.
You know, you got to make that first step and just push yourself as much as you can and never die down. Even in those moments where you feel like, okay, you can't anymore, those are the moments that count.
Yeah.
Because when you push hard on those particular moments and you get through that hurdle, that's when, I don't know why it always happens, bro. It's just like, oh, hallelujah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
The heavens open up, huh? The
heavens open up, man. Crazy. So yeah, that's my best advice for sure.
Tony, thank you for your time, man. Appreciate it. I wish I had like some Lomo or some Inca Kola Chicha, something.
Perfect, man.
Man, ooh. One of these days, I'm going to have, you know, sponsorship by Inca Kola. So, you know, try to make
you
it
know,
happen.
You know, it's Peruvian restaurants. We need you.
We need your support. This is episode number 12 with Tony Sukat. Thank you, bro. Appreciate it once again.
I know you're
busy and, you know, but I'm. Appreciate you so much for doing this and for separating some time, man.
Anytime.
Awesome. All right, guys. This is episode number 12 with Tony Sukat. Check out next week's episode next Friday. Thank you guys for checking out episode number 12 with Tony Sukat. Hopefully you enjoyed it. Episode number 13 comes out next Friday. Check it out. And we will see you guys then.